Hey guys, we're in the 60s again this week. Slightly different plot though. That's right, we're talking Hair of the Film. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Broadway Breakdown.
I wore my hair down today.
You remember?
I remembered. And I'm doing legitimately a dance from the film.
From the film. It is very true. I feel a little bit terrible because this song makes me think of 4-Year-Old Virgin, not of Hair. Because the ending to 4-Year-Old Virgin when they sing this song in the credits is the most amazing thing ever. Hey everybody, we are here. It is the end of May. It is Broadway Breakdown. It's Hair the Film. I'm your host, Brianna Phipps. You can find me at bphipps14 on Twitter and Instagram, bphipps1214 on Snapchat. And I'm here with the lovely Jackie.
1, 2, 3, Jackie B on all platforms. I love this version of the song.
No, I mean, the soundtrack is great.
Love it. I love it. I love the lady who sings it. I love the crazy weird dancing with it. It's like...
It's a different way of coming into a film.
Yeah, and... it's just sad to me that the film itself didn't hold up to this intro, because this intro jazzed me up so much. I was like, so cool, the music's good, everybody's having a blast, and they're dancing.
I mean, the actors may have had a blast making this film.
I'm sure they did.
Who are we to judge that?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I just don't have a blast watching it. But I do think this intro, like, to me... if they would have kept up this kind of, like, vibe that's in the intro, like, it would have helped for the entire film.
Let's talk about some of the differences between the theater show and the film. So, main thing for me...
this is the dawning of...
Claude.
This is why I don't sing.
Claude, the leader of the hippie tribe in the show...
yeah, is now, like, an Oklahoma drafty.
Yeah,
he
was a drafty in the show, but he was a hippie. In
right.
this one, he's a very straight-laced...
He's, like, from America's heartland kind of guy.
Yeah, he's from Oklahoma. He's coming to New York City to join the military... and then he, like, runs into this group of hippies and is like, hey, I'm going to hang out with them.
Right. I mean, I guess I can understand where wanting to impose a plot on this show for a film makes sense. I mean,
because you wouldn't want to sit through half of this film without knowing what's going on. Your attention wouldn't be held as long as in a theater show.
And we've talked about this before where, like, you have to make certain changes from stage to film, and sometimes they make sense, sometimes they don't make sense. In this case, it's like they were trying to blend so much having a plot and then keep in certain things from the original that it was too weird.
Here's my thing. If you're going to introduce this straight-laced guy, why take the leader and make him like that? Why not just introduce a whole new character that wasn't in the show?
Right. You completely changed the essence of what the character was in the show. I mean, you don't have him, like, half naked on stage in the beginning.
And then instead of him, we get Burger, who's supposed to be, like, the sidekick kind of to Claude in the show, and he's, like, not... I'm trying to think of the right words. He's not... as, like, thoughtful as Claude. Like, he's just kind of fully out of it and is, like, a dick to his kind of girlfriend who's in love with him, but she's also with other guys, like, because it's the hippie lifestyle. And then we lose that character completely because you made Burger Claude.
Right. I think Ragni and Rado, they said they didn't like this interpretation, which I can understand, because the reason they said they didn't like it was because it makes the hippies look just like complete jerks or idiots or like
whereas
freaks.
In the show, you get some that are jerks, and then you get some that are idiots, and then you get some that are great people. Like, you have, it's like normal life.
Yeah, it's a spectrum. It's not just like, why are these people homeless, like, in the park being weird? And it's like, I understand that you're trying to... adapt something that was a very, very theatrical, like, avant-garde experience into a play. But if you do that, part of me says, okay, you can't try and keep some of the you can't try and keep like some of the avant-garde stuff and then some of the storyline because you do have these scenes where he's like burning the draft card with the black black screen in the background.
Plus, like, they kind of got rid of the whole essence of the play, which is that you had this guy who believes in all of this stuff, believes in free love and no war and, you know, down with the government, but then like decides that he needs to do what's right, that he can't just ignore this draft in his mind what's right, so he goes to war. And in this one, it's like this guy who's always wanted to go to war and goes, and the hippies go and like
go to war for kidnap him. Like
kidnap him and drag him out of his training camp that he signed up for and wanted to do, and Berger takes his place, and then the plan goes terribly wrong and he ends up going to war against his will,
and then he dies
That
I didn't.
I was just like, you took out the entire essence of the fact that this was like a choice this one guy made.
Right.
Like, even though he was against it, he made this choice for whatever, you know, reason.
It diminishes the choice he made.
Yes.
Yes. And I see where it's also weird to me because in maybe not so much like the revival's a little bit lighter in tone, but at least in the original, this whole ending piece where he decides to go to war, it becomes very dark. Mm-hmm. And it's weird here because you have this comic like switcheroo, and they make it seem so comic. The whole like the everything that leads up to the switcheroo is classic sitcom stuff.
Yeah.
And so
the hippies driving down the highway singing the star Good Morning Starshine.
Yeah. Like, you expect you're like,
they
okay.
They kind of like just took they made it seem like the hippies had no sense of like actual like feelings of any sort besides right. this whimsicalness.
Right. And so you have this weird like sitcom switcheroo situation happen in the end, and then he dies like abruptly, and then they start singing.
It's not even
song.
Like a die, it's like him going on the plane and then grave. And
yeah.
You're like, oh.
You were like,
okay,
that lead up did not, at least in the play, there's some sort of progression to this
and
point.
And like they never
tonally.
Say he dies in the play, like you assume this,
right? You assume it because
of them yelling his name and him standing next to them, right. And them not being able to see him, like, so. But you could easily also just say he's still in Vietnam and is thinking of his friends and
right
whatnot. I mean, I think
the tonal
I don't
shift,
think that you'd be right.
The tonal shift of this is so weird. It would be like watching Will and Grace and seeing like you at the end of the episode, Will just dies and then everybody's singing and you're like, wait, what? What just happened?
And let's get into, like, Sheila, because, okay, Sheila in the play is Berger's girlfriend that sings this whole song of, like,
right.
Why do you have to be so hard? Like, why do you only care about those that you aren't close with? Like, you say have all these agendas. And she's this, like, really complex character in the play because she isn't also just with him, but she is just so in love with him.
Yeah.
But she's also with Claude. Like, you know, she's this really complex character, and she kind of
becomes...
It's a love
triangle.
She's an outspoken feminist,
yes.
too. And in this, she just kind of became one-dimensional.
Like, yeah, she's like your typical prissy debutante.
She's a high... Yeah, she becomes a debutante that dissed that life, but still can go back to it. And I'm like, where did you come up with this? Like, why?
I don't... Yeah, like, the debutante storyline...
I kind of really hate the fact that in most film and television throughout the years, the only people that can be outspoken feminists are people that come from the high society world. Like, they do that a lot.
Yeah. It's this the change of her plot line was just really weird
to
me.
And I'm not saying...
And the fact that they crashed that party and people are, like, angry about them and want them to leave, but no one seems to be able to get them to leave. I'm like, come on.
Also, I just want to, like, clarify that I'm not saying that people from high society can't be feminists and can't like join with that cause. I'm just saying it gets portrayed a lot like those are the only people that are feminists.
Right.
The
but
children
no,
of
like, multiple
high society
dimension.
People. I just wanted to clarify that so I don't get attacked.
Right. No,
yelled at.
Yeah.
And then we also have the musical focuses on the peace movement and in the and love and all this, and I don't get that from the film.
No. The film seems to be truly like an experience in like random ness.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm joining the military. Well, look at those guys. They look interesting. I'm gonna
There's
go,
a horse. I'm a go, horse wrangler. Let me go hang wrangle out with this horse.
Oh, sure. I'll try drugs. Yeah. Oh, now we're naked in a lake. Oh, now we're doing some... Okay, I'm going to go join the army now. Oh, you guys don't want me to?
It's funny, though, because of that whole scene where they have, like, the drug experience in the park. That was the only, like, explainable moment where you're like, I can understand what's going on because it is explained away by the fact that everyone here is doing drugs. And this is the first time in this film I am understanding what is happening. Just going to say.
No, it's true.
Although it was hilarious. I mean, a lot of the explanations...
Some of the law of explanations in the show are the fact that you're like, well, they're on drugs.
Right. Right. But it's understood in the show they're on that the entire time. We don't have Claude really trying drugs until he's...
Yeah, you brought this guy that's never done drugs and then all of a sudden is doing all of these different kinds and, like, having all these experiences.
Right.
I get what they were trying to do. I just don't think that it came across in the way that they wanted it to.
Right. Right.
Let's talk about some of the soundtrack changes. So they got rid of The Bed, Dead End, Oh Great Power, I Believe in Love, Going Down, Air, My Conviction, Abby Baby, Frank Mills, and What a Piece of Work Is Man, which at least three of those songs I was upset that they weren't in because I love I Believe in Love because it's such a great hippie anthem.
Yeah, it is.
Going Down because it's like the end of the first act. It's like this like change. It's like where you first start to feel the change in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then What a Piece of Work Is Man. Like, those, I think, are three great songs. Like, I can understand getting rid of Air. Sure. And Frank Mills. Like, we don't need a song about a random girl that, like, had sex with a guy that she thought was this
person. I think film musicals do this a lot, though, because especially with something like Hair, where the live musical is so dependent on the experience of the music, whereas when you're trying to stick a narrative to something, sometimes you're like, oh, crap, like, where do I put this in? Where do I put that in? And I know that films a lot of time, like, cut certain numbers to try and make explanations, but in this case, like, they cut a lot.
Yeah. And you could have cut more of, like, some of the, like, more campy songs. You know?
Yeah.
And kept some of those more powerful songs in there. Because in film especially, like, the campiness just becomes too unbearable.
And some of the songs that they try to explain away by, like, the random scenarios they've created, you're like, I don't, this is a push to try and the Manchester England song.
Yeah, it doesn't
They're
work
trying
that well
to, like,
in
impose
film.
A meaning on it, and I'm like...
Because they changed some of the lyrics for that one.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's one of the songs. Like, and I love that song, but it could have not been in the film. It didn't fit in the film.
Right.
Not with what they were trying to
They're
do.
They're just like me, and they just like the catchy tune, and they were like, let's try and impose something on it.
We need to have Claude sing about himself.
Right. We need to have that happen.
They also introduced a new song written by McDermott, said called Somebody to Love. It's whatever.
It is whatever. It wasn't, you know me, the Oscar bait songs. I mean, it got nominated for a Golden Globe, but I'm never a big fan of the Oscar bait songs.
Sometimes Oscar bait songs I do like it, but majority I would say no, but like there are a few times it does work. But it's like, if you're gonna write an Oscar bait, like actually write one that fits with the style and fits with the story.
Right.
Don't just like make a song and be like, we're just gonna put this song in there to have a new song. Boom. Done.
That's how I feel they do it a lot. I will say, though, randomly that I love these costumes. It was probably one of my favorite parts about the entire thing because the costumes felt... And remember, this is made in 1979, so they're a bit removed from the 60s, and the costumes are still so authentic to the 60s, which is something I really loved.
79?
Yes.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, wasn't that long. It was 10 years after the show.
Right.
And the 70s, like, still had, I mean, 79, you're obviously getting out of it. But, I mean, the early 70s still had the hippie movement going. And they had a lot of the same style.
Yeah. I love these costumes. They were so authentic to me. It was something I really enjoyed about it. And it's harder on stage because you're trying to make... Well, in the original piece, it was just people wearing their normal clothes. And then in the revival...
Like we said, we're pretty sure they just showed up to
them. Right. And then in the revival, you know, you're trying to do these, like, stylized costumes that represent the 60s. But this was something really exciting to me because you could really, you know, see the detail and the effort that they put into these costumes.
And going into what you talked about with the critical acclaim and stuff, and as it goes, mostly what it seems like with me, whatever I tend to like, usually critics hate, and whatever I tend to be eh about, critics love, and as such, they seemed to actually love this film. Yeah,
they did love this film.
This is my question, I wonder. Do these film critics watch the show first?
Yeah.
Do they know what where it came from?
And have these film critics ever seen another film? Maybe this was the first film they had ever seen, and they were like, films are cool! I love films! That's the only explanation I can offer
today. It's like, if the original, and this is the quote from the original people, that they were unhappy with the film adaptation, saying it failed to capture the essence of Hair.
Yes.
And that hippies were portrayed as oddballs and some sort of aberration without any connection to the peace movement.
Right.
And any resemblance between the 1979 film and the original Biltmore version, other than some of the songs, the names of the characters, and the common title, eludes us.
Well, it's like, and you then have
the
this,
critics love it.
You have
the creators yeah. don't. Like, it doesn't seem to make much sense.
The only one, I mean, there are some movies that I love that the creators didn't like Mary Poppins, but this was not one of them. But I do agree with them in that, like, the portrayal of the hippies in this film, a lot of them you felt like, God, these guys are just, like, jerks.
Yeah, and
you have the guy who's, like, peeing in Burger's, like, peeing in public. Yeah, it's like you're citing,
instead of, like, trying to understand the hippies and trying to look at them through a different version and, like, being like, okay, like, while they maybe did some stuff that was disgusting, like, or they weren't, like, clean or whatever, whatever your persona of them was, you were able to kind of understand them,
and right,
at least, like, even if you didn't side with them, like, you could see where they were coming from. And this, I was just like, if that was my house, like, I would be pissed, like, what assholes just walking through here.
And this is the problem. This is what you do when you stick someone, when you change Claude to be not one of the hippies, when you change him to an outsider, mm-hmm. because you then are experiencing the film like Claude is experiencing,
and so you're
it.
Feeling uncomfortable because right. you don't know, because you don't like know these happening. guys. But you also think what they're doing is wrong, and you're just kind of like, I don't know what to do.
Right. This is why it would be better if you're gonna really stay true to that. You have Claude, like, as a hippie, and therefore the audience member is experiencing it as the hippie.
Now, like you said, it was nominated for some Golden Globes for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. Maybe that was the only one it was. That's the only
I think
I
it was only Best Musical Comedy.
Yeah, so, and it didn't win. I don't know what else to say about it. Like, it's...
The only other thing I can say is that, in hindsight, it's interesting that this was made in 79, like, right on the border of the MTV era.
Mm.
Because I feel like... If this film had been made in, like, mid to late 80s, they would have just gone back to the original, like, format of Hair and made it more of, like, a long musical experience. Because in the 80s, everyone was so ready and so ripe to see just, like, long-ass musical numbers that are, like, flashy and fun and exciting to watch. Like, you almost didn't need that narrative mm-hmm. if you did it a few years later.
Yeah, it's like you could have rearranged some of the stuff so that more of the Vietnam stuff was happening within some of the silliness of the, of, like, just the hippies being hippies.
Right.
Like, you could have taken the second act and kind of woven it into the first act, and it would have worked.
Right.
And you wouldn't have had that first half of your film just be complete nonsense.
Yeah. Also, how do the other guys in the barracks not, like, mention, hey, this isn't the guy we trained with? You would know that. Like, yeah, he looks nothing like him.
He's just able to cut his hair, put on the clothes.
Right. And boom. Nobody says anything. Nobody's like, hey, I didn't train with this guy. I don't want to go to war with this guy.
On the grave, did it say his actual name? Or did it say Claude? I'm trying to remember.
It said Burger.
Yeah. How did they know then?
Yeah.
Like, they just, like, yeah. accept this guy as Claude. He dies, but then they're like...
But then when they ID his body, they're like, oops, wrong guy.
And we know not his real name, but the name he uses.
Yeah.
To put on his grave. Sorry. Continuity.
That old fun sitcom-y comedy.
I mean... I don't really have too much else to say about this show, because it's just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know if you have anything you want to add.
No, I'm sorry, you guys. Like, we tried. We tried really hard. With this
Fortunately, there is a lot of news this week with Broadway.
Oh, before we do news, I do have a fun fact. The guy who played Woof, I found out that he was a guitarist for Chicago. Not the original guitarist, but like later on in the late 70s, early 80s, he was a guitarist for Chicago. Oh, so I found that fascinating. I was like, oh, you go, Woof.
Yeah, I mean,
his real name is Donnie Dacus.
Nice. So,
yeah. Fun
fact. But like I said, we do have a lot of news this week, so kind of works out that we didn't have too much to say on this film.
Tons of news.
Because we can spend more time on the news this week.
Yes.
So, Mamma Mia.
I thought of you.
So are you guys not excited?
Oh my god.
No?
What do you mean, Alexis?
Especially Brianna, aren't you just like,
okay, I will say
this. I thought of Brie so much when this was announced.
I will say this. I did not hate Mamma Mia as a film. I did not like Pierce Brosnan.
Correct.
Only Pierce Brosnan?
There was other flaws, but as a whole, I could deal with everybody else. I could not deal with him.
There was a lot of bad singing, and it wasn't just Pierce Brosnan.
I'm not saying there wasn't, but I could deal with it. I couldn't deal with him.
But yet we have... See, here's the thing. When I first read that news, I initially thought it was going to be a sequel to the original musical with the original cast. And I was like, yeah! And then I kept reading, and I was like... Oh no!
You realize how old the original cast would be? Like, not all of them, but like some of them.
Yeah, some of them though. Like, they're still young and spry. Yeah. So I was super excited until then. I was like, oh,
yes. this is a movie sequel to the film with the original cast.
No, ma'am.
So
we talk about this all the time, but it's like, why do you do this to people? Why not bring in the original Mamma Mia cast, some of whom are not that old, and just have them play those roles?
Or like take some of the cast that's too old and have them play other roles.
Right. Anyway.
Just a thought.
I was feeling super bitter about that because I wanted to see the original Mamma Mia cast, and then when I kept reading, I was let down because I was like, oh, this is a sequel to the film. At least Brianna will be mad with me.
I'm just wondering what they're going to do. Because the show ends in such a way that I'm like, where are we going to go from here? Like,
I guess like the birth of the children.
Children?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
everyone comes back to the island.
My child's spitting up again.
It says that the film's going to feature a soundtrack full of songs that were not in the film. Or not in the first show. /film.
Well, that does make sense because ABBA does have
a lot
of
music. So at least they're
going to
stick with the ABBA.
Right.
Please let's not write Pierce Brosnan his own song this time.
No.
Can I get an okay from you, Universal? Can we get a just deal right here? If we're going to write someone a song, can we write someone else's song? Not Pierce Brosnan.
It's going to be Pierce Brosnan.
If it is Pierce Brosnan, can we hire someone to sing for him?
It's going to be like Three Men and a Baby where the dad dies and then like Pierce Brosnan and the two uncles have to like come in and take in. It's like Full House meets Three Men and a Baby.
Wait, what happened to the dad?
And then
did the dad leave?
The love interest in my story dies. And then Pierce Brosnan and two uncles come in and they help take care of the baby like Full House.
Okay,
and the mom is alone. And then Pierce Brosnan is seeing all the main numbers because he's like the Bob Saget of the group.
No. Just please no. Okay, this is my thing. Okay, at the end of the show, she winds up... If you haven't seen Mamma Mia, please turn off... now, because I'm going to give a spoiler.
Right. Also, if you haven't seen Mamma Mia, go watch Mamma Mia. I mean, go watch the real life musical, too. It's really good.
So we end the musical, and in the movie and in the show, with her with Sam. The one guy is gay. The other guy is with the one girl. The other, the MILF woman is, like, kind of with the friend of the other guy.
Yeah.
And then Sophie and blanking on her husband, or not husband, they didn't get married, her guy's name, are going off to travel the world. So this is my thought. Are we jumping? Are they coming back from their travels?
I hope they do it on their travels. I would love to see that.
Or is it like going to be like 5 minutes after the film and, oh, boat capsized, can't leave. Let's just get married again.
It's a castaway story.
Let's just redo the marriage and we'll just sing silly songs and have weird thoughts about whether we should get married or not again and sing about it. And
I would like this as a Castaway story. I would enjoy that.
Everybody goes
Mama
out.
Mamma Mia, our boat capsized again.
I mean, they're already on an island.
They went to another island, and they capsized.
I don't know. I mean, guys, if you liked Mamma Mia, I'm not trying to, like, shit on you guys at all.
If like, you like Pierce Brosnan's voice, I don't know how to help you. I don't.
You're totally entitled to like it, and you're totally entitled to be excited about this. I'm just not, and I'll probably still go watch it.
Yeah, I'll still go watch it. Hands down, I will still go
yeah,
watch it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what... yeah, I'm not probably. I'm going to go yeah. watch it. I'm going to go. I'm going to go to a... that adult theater where they serve alcohol when I watch it.
That is why they're making it. They're making it for the people that are like, fuck this. I'm still going to go see it. You know, that's exactly who they're making it for.
So, you know, I guess like I can complain all I want, but I'm going to go see it.
Yeah.
Moving on. Hedwig's John Cameron Mitchell is going to be writing a new musical television series.
I am so friggin' excited for that. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to hear more from him because yes. he songwriting wise, like I at least for me, I only know Hedwig. Like I know he's done other things like here and there, but I only know Hedwig, so I'm just excited to see him take that like he you know like
that
what
kind
he
of
did
humor.
With Hedwig
yeah.
and humor, and I'm interested to see what kind of style of music is going to be. Is it going to be rock still, or is it going to be something else?
I'm just so excited.
He's
super talented.
He is. And he said, right now I'm writing a musical television series, which is much more autobiographical. I'd star and maybe co-direct. I'm also writing the songs. I can't say too much yet, but it's called Homunculus? I can't read that word.
Oh.
Homunculus, I think is how you pronounce it.
Homunculus?
Maybe. There could be different versions. We'll find out when someone
actually says it. I'm not looking at it, so I can't help.
It's like when it's right there. It's like when I read.
I would say homunculus as well.
It's like when I read Harry Potter and I pronounced it Hermione Granger, and then the movie came out and they said Hermione, and I was like, oh.
Well, that's fair that's enough, how it though. Was pronounced. But that's fair enough because I did the same thing. I was pronouncing it however I pronounced it in my head, you know.
Yeah, I mean that's what you kind of have to do if you don't know.
Yeah, right? It's true. It's true.
He says that. I always liked it as an insult. It's something Glenda Jackson would use, isn't it, you homunculus? But it's been coming, consuming me for this past year, and I'm thrilled. It's like I haven't been this excited before because it's coming right out of my bowels.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, that's his quote.
I'm sorry, what?
So that's all we know about it. It's going to be autobiographical, which Hedwig was as well. And it's going to be about his coming out of his bowels, you know?
No, seriously. I'm sorry. What?
It's Bowel Movement, the musical.
The TV show.
The TV show.
It takes a whole season.
It takes a whole season for him to pass that food. I don't know what's happening.
I don't even know what's happening anymore. Sorry, guys. For you guys that are listening, this must be painful. And then next, Hugh Jackman... Share some new details about this musical drama, The Greatest Showman.
I'm excited for anything Hugh Jackman does. Seriously, I saw actually a charity show where he did a bunch of like show tune numbers, and he is just phenomenal. Like he is a nonstop like
and he does
theater
everything.
Machine,
and he does everything.
Yeah,
like
he's Wolverine.
Theater, film,
Wolverine.
He'd be in television if like someone asked him to, I'm sure. And all the while, he'd be working out like 18 hours a day somehow.
Right.
He just won't sleep.
It's true.
He said that up until La La Land, everyone was saying there hasn't been an original musical in 23 years. So the prevailing thought in Hollywood was, unless you have a brand people know, it's not a done thing. So it's just took a long time to get this musical started. I don't like calling La La Land a musical. I'm just saying that right now.
I still haven't seen it. I don't know.
The music is being composed by La La Land, which I liked the instrumental part of La La Land. I just didn't like the singing. And Dear Evan Hansen duo, Benji Pasek and Justin Paul. Here, Jackman revealed that the tunes will have a current pop sound to them. We are clear from the beginning that this would feel like a period, would not feel like a period movie or a historical piece. The actor said, what would Barnum do now? I have almost a 12-year-old daughter. I want the movie to be as exciting for her to listen to as Katy Perry's new song.
Aww, I think that's cute. That's and cute. I definitely think that's something Hugh Jackman can pull
And it's off. Something that theatergoers can watch, but also people that are not fans of theater can go see and, like, still be behind.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not your traditional sounding musical. Because I know that that's a thing, especially with film, that a lot of people don't want to go see certain films that are made for musicals because they just don't like that musical sound.
Right.
Let me see. There was one other piece in here. I just have to find it in this article. He said, I said, if you're going to call it The Greatest Showman, you should play to your strengths and we should make it a musical. That ridiculous remark cost me 7 years of my life.
That's great,
because,
though.
Because, I mean, that's how long sometimes it takes to make a
film.
Yeah,
but that's great. It's people love Hugh Jackman. I think people would go out and see Hugh Jackman. He's a...
Well, yeah, and
he's a great box office draw. He's a great actor.
It's not even that much about, like, we still have no concept of what this film is completely about.
Oh, I'll see it.
But we'll still see
it. I don't know what it is, but I'll see
it. It's Hugh Jackman singing.
There's done. 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 I'm there. I'm there.
I just want him to get an Oscar, and I don't think this might be the film that he'll get that for, but I want him to have an Oscar, because I think he deserves one.
He does deserve one.
I think he's a very underrated actor. People just look at him as an action star, and he's much, much more than that.
Oh, no. He's a phenomenal actor.
Here's some little piece of news for people that I was very... What? When I read it. King Kong, the musical, will be coming to Broadway in 2018.
Here's the thing about that. If they don't do, like, a kind of... If the tone isn't, like, Into the Woods, where it's kind of, like, dark comedy, then I don't know what you're doing. Does that make sense? Because
I
just feel like it should have that kind of tone.
I mean, it's a very Beauty and the Beast-esque type story
ways. Like, for me, it's hard to take... If you're going to try and do this as, like, a serious-ass musical, I don't see how that's going to pass. Like, it would have to be something like Into the Woods, where it's, like, dark, there's comedy.
My biggest thing that I just want to know is, like, how they're going to do the monkey. Like, is it going to be a projector? Like, are they going to have, like, a big arm that comes down?
I would love that. That's what I would love.
That's, like, what's intriguing me the most. It's not that they can't make a great musical from King Kong. It's not that there won't be, like, amazing costumes and songs. It's how are we going to make this giant monkey on stage and not make it be too comical?
Have you ever been on there was a King Kong ride. I don't even know if it's still there at Universal.
When I went, it was 3D.
Oh, it was 3D? Okay, because it was
Skull Island. It was the new one.
Oh, okay. Because I went as a kid. This shows how long
I remember this kind of... I went when I was 10, and I kind of...
But it was like a giant... Yeah, it was just like a giant, like, kind of,
I had
of
forgotten
like
about this completely, but now I'm
thinking of it. Action figure-y, kind of, like, Muppet-y thing, and that's how I imagine it. Just, like, they're going to have some sort of,
going to have to make it larger than life.
Yeah.
Because it's King Kong.
Right.
And
now, like, the technology has gotten better and better and better to be able to do those sorts of things.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some sort of projection used in some way or not.
Right.
But it does say that Peter England is going to do costume design. Scenic design. Costume design will be Roger Kirk. Lighting design by Peter Mumford. And sound design by Peter Helinski.
They just went, Peter, get over here.
Get over here. And Roger.
Peter, and Roger.
So they already have all the people in that are going to, like, kind of create the behind the scenes. There's no, like, cast yet or anything, but they already have the preview and opening on sale dates will be announced in the coming months. So they already know, I'm sure, who they're already either thinking or they already know some of the cast, but they're just not releasing that yet.
The only thing is, with this technology, it's like we ran into the problem of Spider-Man where it was, like, so much technology.
Yeah, you did too much.
Yeah,
and
so
and it took too long to get open, and then by the time it was open for, what, like, a month and
then
closed?
Yeah. So part of me wonders, like, is this going to be another Spider-Man, or is this going
to
be
trying to do too much?
Right.
Can we realistically do this without breaking the bank?
Yes.
Because I think, like, you could have some really great songs in that kind of a storyline.
I think so, too.
And the costuming, because it's set in the 20s and stuff, it's
right.
Always going to be gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's the biggest thing is the monkey. Like, because if you don't do the monkey right, it's going to come across as like too comical, and then it's not going to be taken seriously, and this film slash movie story needs to be taken seriously. So I don't know.
That's why I think like it, when you have snags in technology like that, the best thing is to rely on some humor. So I think that it would be good if they injected some humor for them, so they don't have to feel like, oh my gosh, we're breaking the bank to try and like make this like a realistic monkey love story. They don't have Disney money, guys. They don't have Disney money.
Speaking of Disney.
Speaking of Disney money.
ABC is going to do a live musical version of Disney's The Little Mermaid on October 3rd.
I'm like, here's the thing. I could be really excited about it because I saw the Little Mermaid they did at the Hollywood Bowl, mm-hmm. and they had a lot of like original cast members. They had the one I saw had the original Ariel. I know Sarah Bareilles. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Yeah, but she played the Little Mermaid for most of the days. The day I saw it was Jodie Benson, the original Little Mermaid, and then they had a lot of like all star cast. They had Norm Lewis as Triton.
Jackie, she just feels okay about Norm Lewis. For those of you that maybe are just tuning in, she's just, he's just okay to her.
It's not like I'm waiting outside of his bedroom or anything. Anyway, so I'm hoping that they do really good casting for this, because if they don't, it's just going to be annoying to me.
Yeah.
And I want to see, I want to see Norm Lewis as King Triton in this. That's the kind of thing I want to see. I want to see a good mix of like celebrities who can sing and like Broadway stars.
Well, they said it's going to be a blend of elements from Disney's animated musical with live performances. Celebrity artists are expected to be a part of the cast, performing Alan Menken and Howard Ashman's songs. There's not much more about it yet.
But Disney does have the money to... ABC, which is Disney, same thing.
Yeah, they own ABC. If you didn't know that, Once Upon a Time would not exist on ABC if Disney didn't own it.
Right. So they do have the money to make this really good, so I'm just hoping that that's what happens. They use their money to make it really good.
It's funny because Titus Burgess was Sebastian,
and he was fabulous.
And he was in, or he is in, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt as Titus.
He's so good.
Go take the name in there. It'd be great to get him in to play Sebastian, since he was on the theater show. That. And it's he crosses both worlds. He's theater, but he's also, everyone knows him from Kimmy Schmidt. Yeah, so.
And his voice is amazing.
Yeah, he has a great voice. If you haven't seen the seasons of Breaking Kimmy Schmidt, I just binged like 4 episodes this morning, and they do a great parody Lemonade, like 3 different songs from it.
Yes.
So where you can see his voice being utilized.
Yeah,
in a very
way. That's a great example of how great his voice is, and he was wonderful live as well.
Yeah, but there's not much more about it. I'm surprised that they're releasing it saying it's October 3rd. Like that seems
right. It
so
seems
close.
Rather soon.
It's like ABC's just jumping on this live train.
Right.
These live musical train. Like, I mean, they're again, like, we're going to do it a little differently, but we're going to jump right on in it.
I'm sure they've been building it up in development, but at the same time, it's like they do have the money to fast track that sort of thing anyway.
And they can do all the Disney musicals that no one else can do.
Yep.
It's going to be interesting. Once they give out the cast, I'll see what I think. I feel like I can't do anything with this until I know what the cast is going to be.
I think that's fair. That's how I feel. If they start casting Ariana Grande in every role, I'm just going to be mad.
And Ariana Grande is the Little Mermaid, as well as Ursula.
As well as King Triton.
And Eric. And the dog. She's not Sebastian, though.
She's not Sebastian.
Okay.
They brought in Martin Short for that.
The last bit of news isn't really news. It's just Will and Grace put out a little kind of teaser thing for the new season that's coming up, and they parodied Sunset Boulevard's song in it, so I wanted to play it because, one, I just love Will and Grace, and I can. But also, I thought it was a great parody of it.
I was also hoping that like they would do a whole bunch of songs in the new show, but we'll see.
I think it's also funny because you'll see in this thing that Karen does the Karen voice in it, which she's sung in the show before without the Karen voice, so it was interesting to see that she chose to do that.
Yeah.
I'm scared, okay? I'm scared. I don't know why I'm frightened. I know my way around here. The brooding guy, the drunk who's by, the tight. tightly wound queen.
I just love this.
A world to rediscover.
I'm so happy this show is coming back.
In our sitcom-sized apartment.
What a way to bring it back, too.
We could never.
It's a show we need now.
Yeah.
Anonymous liaison.
If possible, like some of them, most of them kind of look better than they did, which is like ridiculous.
Still need that thrill and one blue pill, cause now I'm in my 40s.
Don't they all sing like professionally except for Will?
They've all been on Broadway before except for
even
Eric
including
McCormick.
Yeah,
I don't know if Eric McCormick has been, but he sings.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, Karen she's singing in the Karen voice, but Megan Mullally obviously has been on Broadway and can sing better than that. And then in the show, Grace is usually portrayed as like a terrible singer. Right. So it's kind of nice to see them let her just sing.
Yeah. I can't wait. I mean, I'm just hoping that they do some little Broadway numbers in their show, too. Because like we said, they're all Broadway people except for the guy who plays Will. I'm not gonna lie, this kind of makes me want to have a Sunset Boulevard revival. Just saying.
Aren't they doing Sunset Boulevard right now?
They are.
With Glenn Close? On Broadway? I'm pretty sure they are.
Sorry, guys. Let me look that up. I did not know that.
It just makes me so, and they filmed that on the Radio City Music Hall stage. So, I just, it's bringing back the same feeling. I mean, the show's always done Broadway. Like, they've sung little bits of Broadway songs or made references. So it's great to see them come back in that way and just be like, this is who we are. We're still the same. We're not changing because the world has changed. We're just doing what we do.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best way to do a revival, though.
Like, yeah, because if you don't, then it's terrible.
Yeah, because that's what you're tuning in
but
for.
Everyone that watched it back then is going to be like, it's going to be like Girl Meets World and Aldrin's going to hate it. Sorry, hashtag not sorry. So that's it for our news for the day. Do you have anything that you know that you want
to
say?
No, but next week is Next to Normal. Oh, and if you like RuPaul's Drag Race, I do that after show in 2 hours.
Yes, and I'm very excited for Next to Normal. It's one of my top three favorite musicals of all time. So we're going to have a lot to talk about with that one. As always, you guys can find me at BFIPS14 on Twitter and Instagram, BFIPS1214 on Snapchat. And where can they find you one last time, Jackie?
123 Jackie V on all platforms.
And we'll see you guys next week for Next to Normal. Have a good week, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.